very much, Dr. Heimer, and thanks to everyone here for sticking around till the very bitter end. I appreciate it. I kind of can't imagine there's anything more fun you want to do with your time than voluntarily sit and listen to a lawyer talk about federal regulation, but that's a different topic. So I'm going to sort of look at things that from a little higher level than the other presenters today. I'm going to talk a little bit about why we are where we are in terms of the regulatory system we have in this country. So I'm going to get a little bit of history of the Tobacco Control Act and the litigation that predated that regarding e-cigarettes, and how that interplay works with state and local governments and their ability to regulate e-cigarettes. Because I think there's often a lot of confusion about what can be done and where their gaps might lie between the federal government and state and local governments. And as you probably gathered, I'm a colleague of Desmond's, Desmond Jensen's here, so I'm going to skip through our information about our organization. But I decided to keep in, I always go back and forth on whether I should keep in a slide on what are e-cigarettes in my presentation base. But I keep in here for a variety of reasons, and one is because I used to give these talks and I felt like I was actually giving information to people about what these products were. A few years ago, people didn't really know. There was much beyond the cigarette-like products. And I think now I end up talking to somebody after almost every presentation where they describe to me some random new entrepreneur's dream of something that has morphed into that's kind of mind-blowing to myself. And it helps us to craft policies on e-cigarettes as we're looking at what the future may hold, and we try to have something that's sort of future-proof. In addition to that, the term e-cigarette is almost antiquated in some circles. And when we look at state regulations of e-cigarettes, and there was a great paper that was published last December in Tobacco Control by Stan Glantz and his colleagues at UC San Francisco about the definitions of e-cigarettes and state laws. And they're called everything from vape pens to electronic delivery devices, electronic smoking devices, inhalant delivery systems, tobacco substitutes. I mean, there's a whole variety of different products, not to mention what the vernacular of what the kids are who are using them in many cases call them. So I keep it up just for that reason. Why do we want to talk about these? And I think that my co-presenters here talked about that very clearly. But we know that they're very appealing to kids. While the use of conventional cigarettes has declined quite significantly, the use of e-cigarettes has increased precipitously over the last couple of years. They could be a potential gateway to cigarettes. We don't really know yet, but we do know that they have nicotine, which is an addictive toxic chemical. The unproven cessation claims, Rebecca talked very directly about some of those. And I think most importantly, perhaps most importantly, is the unregulated manufacturing. We have no idea what's in these products at this point. According to the American Academy of Pediatrics, there are about 460 different brands of e-cigarettes on the market. So when people say that they're safer or they're safe, who knows? I don't know what particular product they're talking about because there's just a whole world universe of them. And at this point, as you've heard, there isn't any federal regulation. There's no ingredient disclosure requirements. There's no quality control standards in the manufacturing process. So we just don't know, when we use that term, what we're referring to. And then finally, there's only preliminary data on any of the health risks in these products. So we just don't know what the long-term effects are going to be. So the e-cigarette regulatory scheme, I think, really started in 2009, and that was when the FDA took its first proactive step and wouldn't allow a shipment of NJOY e-cigarettes to come into the country from China. The distributor Cetera sued and said that the FDA didn't have the authority to regulate e-cigarettes. They regulated them saying they were unregulated drug delivery devices, and the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit agreed with the e-cigarette companies and said the FDA, in fact, does not have the authority to regulate them because they haven't made any therapeutic claims, so no cessation claims at that point. But the court did kind of give them a pathway because between the time of the litigation started and ended, the Tobacco Control Act was passed, and the court said, well, you can't regulate them as a drug delivery device. However, under the Tobacco Control Act, the FDA has the authority to regulate them as a tobacco product. So, as I mentioned, in 2009, the Tobacco Control Act was passed, and that gave, initially it immediately regulated four categories of products: cigarette tobacco, roll-your-own tobacco, and smokeless tobacco. But it also had this provision that we have been referring to a lot today that gave the Secretary the authority to deem other tobacco products to be subject to the regulations under the Act, this so-called deeming regulation that we keep referring to. So I think us in the tobacco control community, this was in 2009, the Cetera decision was in 2010, we kind of thought we were going to get some regulations pretty soon, this proposed deeming regulation. So we waited, and finally in April of 2014, the proposed deeming regulation came out, and it was a pretty big issue. It had a lot of media attention to it. There were about 80,000 comments submitted to the FDA, and it did some, you know, it includes some really positive steps. You know, things like requiring ingredient disclosure, prohibiting false and misleading ads, things like that. But as we talked about before, some of the other speakers. The problem is, first of all, is this is just a preliminary regulation, so it's not final yet. But the other key piece is that most of these provisions won't take effect for a period of time after the final rule is issued, and that could be 2 to 3 years later. So at this point, we don't have the final rule yet. So we're looking at 2019 in some cases for some of these provisions to apply. In addition to these automatic requirements, there are a number of other components to the proposed deeming regulation. And most notably, this kind of shows you some of the areas where there was a potential for regulation and how cigarettes were regulated and how e-cigarettes were not. So e-cigarettes, the minimum purchase age of 18, which is an important component, and there was a prohibition of free samples. But again, as we've talked about, flavors were not included in the preliminary regulation, and neither were self-service displays, which we thought was another important component. The other thing that I should mention, and I'll probably refer to this several more times as I talk here, is that it's important to remember, and this is really key and a key issue when we talk about the federal government and state and local governments filling in the gaps, is that the FDA only has authority to regulate tobacco products, meaning those products that contain nicotine that's derived from tobacco. And we know that many e-cigarettes are marketed as being nicotine-free, and when they've been tested, they actually do contain nicotine. So the enforcement issue is very difficult to determine there, and there's always going to be that gap of the tobacco products versus the non-tobacco products. For those of you who want to send a birthday card to the proposed deeming reg, it's 18-month birthday of last week, but now I think the good news is that you can actually send it to the Office of Management and Budget instead of the FDA. So it's really in the final stages, we think. So we're hoping to receive something and see something very, very soon. We know that it's out of the FDA's hands at this point. Again, we talked about some of the missed opportunities, some of the areas that we thought were potential to be regulated in the deeming regulation that were not. The flavored one, obviously. Internet sales, again, we talked about that, and child-resistant packaging. My co-panelist here talked about those in a lot of detail, but brand name sponsorship as well, and self-service displays, which is keeping them off the counters in convenience stores where they're often positioned right next to candy displays. Okay, so I apologize once again. I want to go one more time back into the Tobacco Control Act, because this is really kind of where the rubber hits the road in terms of what's the authority of state and local governments to regulate e-cigarettes? How can they fill in those gaps? How can they move beyond what the federal government has done or will potentially do? And it really comes down to three clauses in the Tobacco Control Act that set kind of the regulatory framework. And it's the preservation clause, which basically preserves the right of state and local governments to regulate the sale of e-cigarettes, or of tobacco products, including e-cigarettes for our purposes here. Then it goes on to have this preemption clause, which says, however, they don't have the authority to regulate or to adopt tobacco product standards. Tobacco product standards isn't a term that's defined in the Act itself, but it's really the manufacturing part of this. So the robust point of sale is really under the authority of state and local governments. The manufacturing piece, what's in the products, is under the authority of the federal government. And then they have the savings clause, which says, essentially, we really, really meant what we said in the first one, in spite of the fact we have the preservation clause. So, state and local governments do really have this authority. So where does that leave us? It means the FDA is going to be responsible for doing things like product standards, nicotine yields, establishing those, how the products might be constructed. The FDA does not have the authority to regulate how these products are used, so they can't add them to smoke-free laws, for example. They don't have the authority to tax or other pricing mechanisms, and we know that those are sometimes the most effective through our history of tobacco control. Pricing strategies are the most effective way to both decrease use, and because kids are the most price-sensitive consumers, that's the best way to kind of create an economic barrier to entry. And also, the FDA can't ban a class of products. So again, conversely, state and local governments can't adopt the product standards, but they can add in the smoke-free laws, increase the taxes on e-cigarettes, other pricing options that I'll talk about momentarily, and then regulate the sales and distribution. The advertising promotion piece, I would say, is kind of a, you know, kind of once you've done the other policies, I would say that's an area where you can kind of consider. It's a little bit dicier from a legal perspective, because you can often run into some First Amendment issues. So it's something that has to be really thought about carefully. So what are some of these options? Let's talk about those in a little bit more detail, what we think can be done at the state and local level. Adding in the smoke-free laws, a number of states have already done this, and this has been, I think it's been very effective. Why do you do it? What's the policy rationale? Well, primarily it's we don't know, you know, part of it, we don't know what the effects, secondhand effects are of, or even the first-hand effects of inhaling this aerosolized vapor, or this aerosol from e-cigarettes. Secondarily, the social norm impact. My kids have grown up in a world where they don't ever see cigarettes. It was a foreign concept to them, really, and then all of a sudden they're seeing e-cigarettes all over the place, and it's very confusing. It ends up kind of renormalizing the whole you know, culture of smoking, which is something that's I think it's important to consider. I have a bug flying at me. Enforcement becomes very difficult. Knowing what's a cigarette, what's an e-cigarette can be problematic, although with the new ones, they don't tend to look so much like cigarettes. And then finally, we've done a lot of work with states where recreational marijuana is legal. And in those cases, public use is prohibited, but because many of these products can also use marijuana in them and other drugs as well, it's impossible to know who's using what, where, and when. So people are walking around aerosolizing marijuana all over the place. So I think the research I've been listening to talk about the Bermuda Triangle of tobacco, e-cigarettes, and marijuana in this combination. It's very enforcement becomes essentially impossible at that point. Our suggestions are basically to add them to existing smoke-free laws. And then in this case, we prefer not to exempt cessation devices, although there aren't any that are yet approved. But in the event that they are, it makes enforcement very, very difficult for smoke-free laws. Restricting youth access. As we've heard, almost every state now has instituted a law that restricts kids from buying e-cigarettes. The problem is, and I think the problem with thinking that this is an issue that's finished is that, as I said before, the definitions are very different from state to state, from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, and many of them follow the federal law where it would only restrict the sale of products that contain nicotine that's derived from tobacco. But we know that many of them that say they don't have nicotine do. And also, there's a pretty strong public policy argument that kids shouldn't really be able to buy e-cigarettes without nicotine either. I mean, it's a nice gateway, nice starter for kids to be using to progress into the others, or it's also in a way that they can at least buy the device itself and use it with any sort of a product. Again, self-service displays is an important one. So for this, we tend to suggest using very broad definitions, including as a tobacco product, but there's really little policy argument that's against including or prohibiting kids from getting a broad range of these products. Flavored products have been covered pretty closely adequately by everybody on the panel here, but we know that they appeal to kids. That's what kids are using primarily, the candy flavor the kids and fruit flavor the kids are using. We also know through our history in tobacco control that the younger kids are, when they start using tobacco products, more likely they're going to become addicted to nicotine. We also know that nicotine has a more nefarious effect on the brains of kids. And then finally, also the flavors such as menthol can be more difficult even for adults to quit. And this is a policy area where we have seen success, at least in restricting the sales of flavored products, tobacco and including e-cigarettes, to adult-only retail stores, places like Providence, Rhode Island, Chicago. The area that we've had the most, and we probably have worked in about 40-some jurisdictions on e-cigarette policies, 40 different states, excuse me, on e-cigarette policies, but the area that's been the hottest in the last year or so is on taxation. Taxation is, again, it's a really important area because we know the effect that higher prices have on usage. But taxation is a super complicated area, and so it's something I don't want to talk too much about here. But it's something I'd be happy to talk to you about any further time. But really, it comes down to which types of products are going to be taxed and how the tax is going to be administered. And what makes it unusual is that the ad valorem tax, which is based on the percentage of the price, is often not the industry's preferred approach. And they've been very successful in getting taxes based on the per milliliter, or in some cases, proposing per milligram of nicotine, which the enforcement would be very difficult. It would also encourage selling pure nicotine to be mixed at home, which caused a lot of the problems that Desmond was talking about. This is just a quick snapshot of the e-cigarette tax landscape. Out of the way. The yellow states, or the whatever color that is, are have either jurisdictions or the state itself. So four states have implemented e-cigarette taxes. Chicago just actually adopted one last week. It'll take effect on January 1st. But the red states are all the states that have either proposed in the governor's budget or actually have legislation or proposed legislation in the last year or two to tax e-cigarettes. So this is an area that a lot of states are working on this. And again, it's very complicated, and we're still trying to figure out how it's going to flush out. Prohibiting coupons and free samples, prohibiting the redemption of coupons, not the distribution, that runs into First Amendment implications, but not allowing coupons to be used, creating that economic barrier to entry, creating minimum prices for these products, and then again, prohibiting free samples. And again, this is another area where since the FDA only can regulate nicotine products, there's an incentive, I think, for state and local governments to have a broader policy that prohibits free samples of all these products. Because again, I don't think there's a good policy reason why kids should be able to sample non-nicotine e-cigarettes either, just to get a sense of what they are. Minimum purchase age, as you probably know, Hawaii raised their minimum purchase age to 21 last year. A number of jurisdictions around the country have done that. It kind of raises this out of the realm of high school. This has also been an important policy for jurisdictions that are considering, for jurisdictions that are considering that have legalized marijuana, because they want to have the same age for marijuana, tobacco, and alcohol, so that people, if they're vaping, they know that if they're 19 and they could legally use e-cigarettes, there's a problem if they're using marijuana products. So it's making a consistent policy to make enforcement at least feasible. Internet sales, everyone's talked about that pretty closely. And then finally, there are a couple other federal initiatives that I think are on the radar that are worth just to note that have just come up in the last few weeks. The FTC just announced plans to study the sales and marketing of e-cigarettes, so we'll see what happens. That's a little ways down the line, but it will give us a sense, I think, a better sense of what's going on in that realm. And then the U.S. International Trade Commission also just announced plans to, for the first time, measure or quantify the number of imports of e-cigarettes into this country from China. To date, so far, they've only been tracking these broad categories of kind of electronic products, which doesn't tell us much at all, but at least we'll have a better sense of how large this market is, because there's really no good way to measure it at this point. If you have questions, I would strongly encourage you to contact us. We do this work all around the country and are happy to talk to you. We have lots of publications on our website that you're happy to look through too. We're happy to have you look through, excuse me. So thanks very much.